Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou katoa and welcome to Red Alert. You're listening to Anahila Kanongata Asuisuiki. I'm the Labour MP based in Papakura in Tāmaki. Well, today's Tongan Language Week and the theme is whakakoloa o Aotearoa aki ai tauhi whonua. So in a Māori term, tauhi is tiaki and whonua is whenua. So really it's about enriching Aotearoa New Zealand with tiaki whenua. That's how I best are related. But anyway, we're so honoured today. We've got our guest today. We're going to have a conversation about New Zealand's global leadership in terms of women. And the person that we're fortunate to have today is the MP for Kelston. And she is the Honourable Carmel Sepuloni. As you know, she's the Minister for Social Development, the Associate Minister for Arts and Culture and Heritage, Associate Pacific Minister for Pacific People, and of course, she's the Minister for Disability Issues. Carmel, welcome to Red Alert.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity.
It's our honour to have you here. So I spoke about that we're going to talk about New Zealand's role in terms of global leadership. Sometimes we are not aware of that when we're looking internally here in New Zealand, but there are three things that I really want to talk to you about today. One is about you co-hosted a program, a summit in Samoa, Women, Peace and Security Summit in Samoa. We'd like to talk, if you can share about the opportunity you took to the United Nations in New York, and a year ago you attended the opening of the Oceania Arts Exhibition in London at the Royal Academy. So welcome to Red Alert. Yeah. You've been on Red Alert before?
Yes, not for a long time though.
Okay, well good to have you back.
Great to be back.
Yeah,
so I mean the most recent summit that I attended was the Women, Peace and Security Summit in Samoa, co-hosted between New Zealand and Samoa, and an opportunity to talk about the role of women in conflict and post-conflict situations, but also security and peace more broadly. So even, you know, issues around drugs in the Pacific, what's happening at our customs, who's represented in our police force, where we do and where we don't have women in leadership positions, and the impact that women in those positions make. So not really directly part of my portfolio, but I was there to represent our Minister for Defence and was a privilege to be there and to hear from across the Pacific what's happening in the peace and security space.
Okay, so which countries attended?
I think there were about 21 countries present. Of that, I think 16 of them were Pacific nations present there, and very broad-ranging conversations. I think one thing that was brought up time and time again is that women, when they're involved in peacekeeping, when they're involved in that kind of high-level decision-making around security or peace agreements, all those things along those lines, that it can make a very positive difference to the outcome. Our Minister for Defence, Ron Mark, is very supportive of having women in these positions, whether it be in top positions in the military or police force or across the board, basically because he believes in the strategic advantage of having women in those roles.
And so I just want to go back to the purpose of the summit. So it was just peace and security, and we had those countries, 21 countries attending from the Pacific. What were their contribution to the program?
All different contributions. I think, you know, one of the most senior politicians there in the room was Deputy Prime Minister of Samoa, Fiame. Was there Mata'afa and talking about the role of women in decision making, clearly, given she's the Deputy Prime Minister of Samoa, and I think really the longest serving Pacific woman and highest ranking, a lot to contribute. We had the Secretary General of the Pacific Forum there, Dame Meg, and she is completely aware of everything that's happening. Her talk ranged very broadly from, you know, conflict and post-conflict situations to climate change and what's happening in the Pacific with respect to that and a range of other things. So very broad-ranging conversations.
So in terms of, well, I just want to acknowledge the minister who enabled you to attend on his behalf. So what do we hope as a country to achieve from attending the summit or co-hosting the summit?
Well, I think it followed very closely on the back of the Pacific Forum. And so I think one, you know, overriding objective has to be to ensure that as a Pacific region, we are all on the same page with respect to decision making and that we are mutually supportive of making sure that we achieve the objectives that, that we need to here in the Pacific. So if that is addressing drugs at our borders, then how do we do that together? If that is addressing climate change and the impact that the changes in weather and more frequent cyclones and whatnot, you know, how do we achieve security with respect to that? And so, you know, a range of things, but with a particular eye on making sure that women are involved in the decision making and in those positions.
That's a very good point to bring, that women are involved, because I think from my knowledge, most of the leaders in the Pacific governments are men. So how was that?
All except for New Zealand.
Yeah. So how was that addressed in the conversations?
I think it wasn't touched on in depth, I guess, because of the fact that we're talking more broadly about peace and security. But, you know, at different points it was brought up about the importance of having women and strategic importance of having women in political positions as well. We know that when you take when you take New Zealand and Australia out of the equation, then the Pacific region has some of the lowest representation of women in Pacific in parliaments compared to the rest of the world. And so it's certainly something that we need to continue to work on together and we need to make sure that, you know, as a neighbouring country, New Zealand is supportive of that in a way that's not deemed patronising, you know, that in a way that is constructive.
Yeah, I think in my role as the chair of Commonwealth Women Parliamentarians, what the feedback from the Pacific Women Members of Parliament is that they do appreciate New Zealand's leadership in the Pacific. So
absolutely. Yeah. And you hosted that great event earlier this year, Anahila, where we had women parliamentarians from Fiji visiting. And then the great thing was then for me to be part of the Pacific Mission with our Deputy Prime Minister and meeting with those women again in Fiji. And they really got a lot out of that particular event that you hosted. So, you know, those exchanges and that continual building of relationships is very important.
And I think not many New Zealanders know that that's something that happens in Parliament in terms of what the work of parliamentarians. So that's why our conversation today is about actually that relationship. It's all about relationship today. And is there anything else you'd like to share about the summit before we talk about New York?
Well, I was over there too. I had the honour of opening the memorial which recognises the influenza epidemic that New Zealand really was responsible for in 1918 in Samoa. I think it's not something that is commonly told through our history books here, but the reality is that New Zealand was responsible for a decision that led to 22% of the Samoan population dying of the flu. And so it was a very unique position for me to be in, given that I was representing the New Zealand government, but I'm also Samoan. And so I think that, you know, if we reflect back, the Prime Minister Helen Clark at the time did make a formal apology, which was really important for reconciliation. And we really did get to see Samoa's fortitude and capacity for forgiveness at that time, because the Prime Minister at that time, who was still the Prime Minister now, said that Samoa has never let that impact on the strength of our relationship. And so we do have a very strong relationship. But it's important for us to remember the lessons from what occurred then.
I think that's a very good point, because I went to school here in New Zealand. Mm. I didn't know anything about that until I watched a documentary on the Talune, is it?
Yeah. Yes, the Talune.
Yeah, the Talune, until I watched a documentary, and I didn't think that that actually New Zealand had a part to play. When people talk about a special relationship between Samoa and New Zealand, that's where I then understood some of that relationship. Yeah. Yeah, so as a Samoan or New Zealander, how was that for you?
I was very emotional, yeah, actually, and I think I went through this process of, needing to forgive New Zealand myself,
yeah,
and the administration at that time. Mm. For me, though, you know, I did know about it, just like, you know, you've learnt about it in later years, mm, as well. And looking into it a little bit more before I went over, I was even more disappointed when I looked at some of the text from that time and saw that the administrator who was responsible for making the decision for that boat or ship to be, mm, able to go into port, and responsible for the flu then infecting one-fifth of the population,
mm,
that his response following it was basically, mm, that just like children, they will get over this. Oh. And so it's a reminder of those types of attitudes, mm, and how there is no role for that kind of attitude in 2019. There really wasn't then,
mm,
but it happened. Mm. And so we just need to be cognizant of that,
yeah,
as leaders, as politicians.
Yeah, and I think too, in terms of Helen Clark's leadership to make that apology, you know, so it's basically for us to apologise and for Samoa to accept the apology.
And they did.
Yeah.
And then even at that time, the Prime Minister, Tui Laipa, said that he didn't feel that a formal apology was necessary.
Mm.
However, Prime Minister Helen Clark said at the time that it was absolutely necessary to ensure reconciliation.
Yeah.
And I think she was right.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's good to know, that Samoa is full of forgiveness.
Oh, yeah.
And forgiving is not just something that happened yesterday, but it is long-standing.
Mm.
Yeah, I think we may leave Samoa there if you don't mind, and go to New York. So you've attended the United Nations program in New York earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah, so that's the United Nations Conference of State Parties on the Convention for the Rights of Disabled People, and it's held annually. I went last year, and I think the thing that really surprised me when I was there is that I discovered that for quite a long period of time, New Zealand had not been supporting the disability sector in the Pacific. So the previous government had made the decision that this wasn't an area that they wanted to invest in with development spend. And so when I went there last year and I saw the Pacific Regional Disability Strategy that had kind of contributions and support by a range of different countries, AusAid, I think the European Union, I think even the Japanese and other countries, I thought, why would New Zealand not support this really important agenda? And so at that time I had discussions with the Pacific Disability Forum, and I said I'd take this back to our Ministry for Foreign Affairs and our Minister of Foreign Affairs, and that I would hope that we would be able to come back into this space.
So that was the program in Fiji that you attended?
There
was one in Fiji?
Last year it was that,
yeah,
and then earlier this year they invited me to go and speak at the Pacific Disability Forum conference held in Fiji, and then it was, you know, I was relieved, I guess, in middle of this year when I did get to go back to the UN and state that New Zealand would be contributing money towards the Pacific Disability Program. Just a start scope where other investment could potentially be made. But this government is committed to the human rights agenda and absolutely recognise the importance of supporting the disability sector in the Pacific. So I'm really glad that we could kind of honour the conversation that I had a year ago. And moving forward, you know, would like to see, I'm not in charge of the foreign affairs spend, but that we continue to support in this space.
So what feedback did the Pacific region give you?
Oh, really good. You know, even last year when I went, and even though we weren't contributing, you know, Pacific to Pacific, that kind of humour around where have you been, what are you doing, and then to go back this year and then say we are coming back in, even though it's a very humble amount that we're starting with, and they were incredibly grateful and just so glad to have us, our support back in the space. And so, you know, now we just need to make sure that we continue to honour that relationship. Mm-hmm. It is part of the Pacific reset. This is part of our partnership. You know, we know that even within our own country, something like 24% of the population identify with having a disability of some sort. So why would we not be supporting the Pacific disability sector, especially because New Zealand has a reputation for leadership globally in this space?
Yeah, I think there's a different expectation from the Pacific when they see the leaders from New Zealand attend who are from Pacific descent.
Yes.
Yeah, and it opens up more frank and free conversation.
Frank and free, sometimes with a bit of humour, but some serious messages underneath.
In between.
Yes.
Yeah, the serious messaging. So what does the program look like and how will it be delivered?
Well, so basically the Pacific Disability Forum didn't ask for a lot initially. It's really just to scope what initiatives could be funded and where there needs to be additional work done. So it's almost like kind of seed funding for that exploration to take place. But can I say, you know, even though we haven't funded in this space for 9 years, it's really interesting. I always say this, and Winston Peters says it best, that for New Zealanders, the DNA, Pacific is in our DNA. And so no resentment about the fact that we haven't been there, just excitement and happiness that we are back.
I know, I remember him. I was with the minister in the Solomons, and he said frankly to the Prime Minister that we're here with our ears wide open and we don't have earmuffs on.
Yeah,
so gone are the days when we just go and take the Pacific for granted. We're here to actually listen and to work together. So,
that's right. And, you know, I can say hand on heart, last year when I got back from that UN conference, I took that strategy to a cabinet meeting with me so I could show Winston that we were the only, you know, donors that were absent from it. And hand on heart at that time, he said, well, that's not right. We have to do something about that. And so, you know, I'm really glad that he does, as the Minister for Foreign Affairs, take the Pacific as seriously as what he does.
Because they do consider us as family, the Pacific.
Well, and, you know, a lot of times they actually are.
Yeah, they
because
are.
Even at the UN conference, one of the main speakers from the, who heads the Fijian Disability Forum, is actually cousins with my husband.
Oh, right.
And so, you know, it's a lot of the time there is not just a connection between, because it's in our blood, but literally
it's in our DNA. I understand that, because that's what they're telling us, in terms of they'll help us if we help them, and, you know, vice versa.
And there's integrity in the relationship.
Definitely is. All right, we'll leave you're in New York and go over to London. So a year ago in September, you attended the Oceania exhibition at the Royal Academy. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that was a long time in the planning, and the first time that we've had an exhibition of that nature. And it was the most amazing experience, because what we had in the lead up to that was a formal opening where there was a march with the Pacific countries represented. And then as we walked through the exhibition, a blessing took place of all of the pieces, the taonga that were there. And very spiritual, very emotional. And the feedback from those who had never had the opportunity to see Pacific arts in that way was actually quite astounding. They had no idea of the kind of level of our kind of technical ability or a range of other things that went back hundreds of years. So, and on top of that, I have to say, being alongside other Pacific countries, Māori, going through the whole blessing, and the next morning waking up, and this is a very Māori and Pacific thing, to the front page of the newspaper there in the UK, being about a beluga whale, so a white whale, having come up the Thames, which was completely out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Can I just say, we know as Māori and
as
Pacific
a signal,
the significance of that.
Yeah.
So we took absolute responsibility for the fact that that whale came up the Thames.
Yeah.
And it really did kind of also just kind of validate our taonga, our ancestors, and our presence in that space at the time.
I read about it, and I was just I was just thankful that we are there to tell our stories.
That's
ourselves, because
right.
there are often times the people telling the stories of people from Oceania are not from Oceania.
Yeah, it's a beautiful exhibition.
Mm.
Yeah.
So in terms of the people that travelled with you to that program, to the exhibition, so you all agreed that the beluga whale was all we were all responsible for that in terms of the ancestors welcoming the exhibition. What was the discussion between yourselves and the Pacific people?
Can I say, even with regards to the whale, I mean, there's you know, culturally the significance is that our ancestors are kind of giving a blessing to what is occurring.
Mm.
Scientifically, it's a sign of climate change and the fact that, you know, the whale has lost the sense of direction with regard to where it's going.
Yeah.
Now, the exhibition was about the kind of cultural dynamic, but was also about those really big issues that we face as a region. So, you know, either which way you look at it, it was significant for the kaupapa of that exhibition.
Yeah, you talked about the role of women in terms of peacekeeping, climate change, leadership in the Pacific region. Where do you think that's going to lead us?
Well, I mean, we know that with agreement, something like significantly when women are involved in peace agreements, then I can't remember the percentage off the top of my head, but they are significantly more likely to be long-lasting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it is important to have women at the decision-making tables. I mean, we haven't got to the 50% mark as New Zealanders, so, you know, we need to own the fact that we've still got some work to do, but being at 40% is significantly more than what is happening across the region, which I think is 7% or lower.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's lots of work to do in that space.
Definitely. Well, Carmel, we've talked a lot about what's happening around the world. We've got about 4 minutes left in our Talanoa today. Is there anything you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, no, you know, this morning I had the opportunity to attend one of the Queen's Honours ceremonies. And really amazing stories from New Zealanders who have contributed, some on the international stage, some more locally at the grassroots level with their communities. This is Pacific people very proud of the fact that we had 16 people honoured, 16 Pacific people honoured in the Queen Honours. And even today, the three that were part of today's ceremony, Felicia Brown Acton for her contribution to the LGBTQI community, both here and also internationally. We had Edith Amitou who has contributed in the art space through her amazing photography, but also in her community. She's she's the chairperson of the Rānui Action Group and very active in West Auckland. And then the other person today with his contribution to Samoan language as a teacher, but also working, I think, with the Pacific Education Centre and in a range of other ways, and that was Piranesi Tapu. So looking forward to continuing to take those opportunities to celebrate the successes that we have and the contribution that our people make, because you know, often we can get bogged down by the challenges, and we need to, you know, be responsive to that as politicians, but we also need to take the time to celebrate with our community the successes that we have as well.
Definitely, because I've just been to the Smiths Ave Community Centre in Papakura, and just listening to people talk about what's happening in the area from people who don't get paid what they do, but passionately do providing a service. So it's just, I think it was sort of soothing to know that in the busyness, there are people in the community who are doing really great things. And if we tell their stories, actually enriches all our lives.
That's right. Yeah. And it lifts us up. Mm. And we all need that.
Yeah, definitely. We all need that. So in terms of positive talanoa in our everydayness, because we can get bogged down into the other side of the conversation. But good to hear that that's happened today. And no doubt it was colourful and lots of laughter and tears. And
very colourful, can I say.
Yeah.
And sitting aside alongside Felicia and a few of our other LGBTQI community, I think our Governor General looked like a tiny, tiny woman next to the Amazonians.
Well, Carmel, it's been an absolute privilege and a pleasure to speak with you today, Talanoa with you today on Red Alert. If you just tuned in, we're almost at the end of our Talanoa with the Honourable Carmel Sepuloni. As you know, she's the Minister for Social Development, Disability Issues, the Associate for Arts, Culture and Heritage, and also for Pacific People. And yeah, I just want to, in terms of feedback for you, Carmel, because I probably don't know whether as a minister, you take people's feedback seriously. But I did meet someone and they said, look, I really like Carmel. And she said, can you just tell her I like the way that sometimes she gets a joke? She comes and talks to us and then she throws a joke in and we all understand it. And that said, with that, laughed and that joke, that makes them think that you're normal.
It's so nice to feel normal sometimes.
I did say to them that we're all human beings.
That's
and
right.
We all laugh and cry like everyone else, but they really appreciate how you do laugh with them.
Thank you, Anahina.
Yeah. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Anahina. And thank you for the work that you do as a backbencher. It's really important and you do so much. So thank you for this interview as well.
Thank you, Carmel. And that was Red Alert with Anahina, the Labour List MP based in Papakura. We'll see you next time. Kamo nofoa.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.